Salt Lake residents have their ballots in the race for mayor. They have until November 21st to mail them in. And the election this year is different for a few reasons. It's later than usual, and it's the first time the city has used ranked choice voting in the process. It's also peculiar or interesting because one of the candidates is an incumbent here in Mendenhall, and another has had the job before and wants it again, Rocky Anderson. Anderson served two terms as mayor, and now 15 years later, he's back. And why is he back? Well, that gets us to the main theme in the mayoral race this year. We asked Robert Gerke of the Salt Lake Tribune to bring us up to speed.
You know, Rocky left office in 2008, and he, after that, was involved in a lot of climate issues, human rights issues. He stayed active in the sort of advocacy, liberal political world, even ran for president. Didn't go well for him, but he ran. So one of the issues that he was advocating for during Mayor Jackie Paskupski's administration was more winter shelters for homeless Utahns. You know, this was after a couple individuals died downtown after a snowstorm.
We have so many people on the streets without homes, without safety.
He held a rally with a group of homeless people at City Hall and said, you know, if anybody else dies this winter, the blood's on your hands. It was pretty direct in that sort of standard Rocky, you know, gusto way.
The next person that dies of exposure on the streets of Salt Lake City will be a result of there being no plan.
So it's an issue that had been on his mind, I would say, for the last several years. But it kind of came together in a way because, you know, we've seen an increase in homelessness downtown, an increase in camping on sidewalks and in parks and on streets.
Liberty Park, Fairmont Park, all of our parks are worse than they have ever been.
Justin Brown.
And it's an issue that Mayor Mendenhall was potentially vulnerable on.
We are standing here at the beginning of August with a plan that has now been submitted to the state of Utah is evidence of that partnership.
There was frustration among some downtown business owners.
Salt Lake City's approach to homelessness and crime is failing.
Pioneer Park Coalition, who were interested in potentially finding somebody else to run against her, because there was frustration there with the response that the city had had to the homelessness problem.
But more money won't fix the problem, nor will it improve the lives of our most marginalized citizens.
And entered Rocky Anderson.
Now our city is degraded, crime-ridden, dangerous, filthy in so many areas, and cruel toward the members of the homeless community.
You know, he fit the bill. He had the experience as a mayor. He still had some political chops and a following and stepped into the fray. And that issue, I think it's fair to say, has defined this election thus far. I think what I would say that makes this race a little unique is that it is so overwhelmingly defined by this narrow set of issues. It is about, you know, unsheltered citizens and affordable housing. And that is sort of the beginning, middle, and end of this campaign. I mean, 4 years ago when we had the mayoral race, there were all of these issues about social justice and police force. And, you know, housing was still a big issue, but so was the lake. So was, you know, air quality. All of these were big, important issues that are kind of getting pushed aside because it is so laser focused on housing and homelessness. It's also been a little bit more contentious, I think, than we're used to. Partly, I think, because you have an incumbent who's having to defend her record. And then you have another incumbent who is, you know, staging an attack on that record. And so, you know, it's become a little bit heated at times. More so, I think, than we're used to in these mayoral races.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the Salt Lake mayoral race, the policies and positions, but the politics as well, of course. We have with us the political science professor Matthew Burbank, the journalist Emily Means with the podcast CityCast Salt Lake, and Robert Gerke, who got us started in the conversation. Gerke says that if you go back just a few months to the spring, it seemed Aaron Mendenhall was the hands-down favorite to win.
You had a popular mayor. First-term mayor incumbents are usually advantaged. She had a good favorability rating and a lot of money in the bank. And so it looked like it was going to be a tough task for anybody to give her a legitimate challenge. But when you got down below that surface level, there were some liabilities there. And the homelessness one was a big one. You had the ballpark neighborhood was upset about crime. You had issues of you know, contentious density questions in Sugar House and all of the ongoing construction and disruption there. Up in the avenues, you had these issues of buses. You had school closures that became an issue, even though those aren't issues the mayor really has much control over. There are things that people are upset about, and the homelessness one we've seen sort of take center stage. It's been interesting to me as I was thinking about this campaign and comparing it to the one 4 years ago. You had all of these issues that they were talking about 4 years ago. You had clean air, climate, you know, transportation, growth, social justice. Remember, we had the George Floyd protests. Yeah. You had all of these issues that were very important, and it was a whole panoply, a whole smorgasbord of issues. This year, it feels like it's been laser focused on homelessness and affordable housing. And, you know, a lot of those other things have kind of fallen by the wayside.
Emily Means, what have you noticed just broadly about this race so far?
Yeah, I'm with Robert on this. I think going into this, anyone probably would have thought Erin Mendenhall had it in the bag. Yeah. I think Robert's right. Like, she's a generally popular mayor, and especially coming out of the three big crises we had her first year in office, 2020, we launched immediately into the pandemic. We had an earthquake. We had a land hurricane. And I think people feel pretty good about how Mendenhall handled all of those issues. But homelessness is the big one, and it's turned out to be the dominating issue in this race and something that's top of mind for everyone. And tied to that, of course, is our affordability crisis. I mean, like, rent has increased in the past 2 years more than it had in the past 10 years, right? And I'm a renter personally, so I feel that. And I know a lot of young people especially are in a similar position. So, yeah, I think homelessness has kind of change the game of this whole race.
Change the game, you think, Matthew Burbank?
Yes, I think what surprised me coming into this election was how early Rocky Anderson got in. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's a very credible candidate, right? Having been a former mayor, having, you know, been somebody who's still active politically and is very much in touch with a, you know, a large proportion of people within the city. And so that surprised me in the sense that I didn't anticipate kind of that level of challenger to come into the race so early on and, again, attack so aggressively on the homelessness issue. And the reason that homelessness, of course, is such an issue is because of it's so visible, right, that there are so many aspects of it that people see all the time and they recognize driving down the street or walking down the street or going to a city park that this is a problem. And it's very visual and very visceral for people. But I think the problem, of course, is if you are going to attack on that issue, right, you really have to have something that looks like here's a better way of handling this. And that's always the trick here, right, is that what do you do to kind of solve this problem?
So it sounds like from all of you, the thing that explains Rocky Anderson's emergence in this race or entrance at all is homelessness. Was it his idea, Rocky Anderson, or was he recruited? That seems to be a question. Robert Gerke, you've talked a little bit about this.
Well, yeah, there were some, you know, downtown business owners, developers who were looking for somebody to run. I don't know specifically if they asked Rocky to run. Maybe Emily or Matt, you know. They were asking other people to run and getting a no thank you. And then Rocky emerged as a candidate, and it dovetailed nicely with their agenda, what they wanted to talk about in this campaign, where they thought the mayor might be vulnerable, what they wanted to see done differently. And so in that sense, it sort of fit. And as Matt mentioned, it became sort of the referendum. He made it a referendum on her handling of that one particular issue. I do agree that he didn't really give a larger vision of what he would do differently. You know, you can attack the other candidate, but you've got to have a clear vision for what you want to do better and a broader vision of what you want to do better, where you see the city going. And so, you know, if you go to his website, yeah, he's got a lot of white papers and detailed policy positions on a host of other issues. I don't think a lot of people go to the websites. And if they are going to the websites, you probably already got their vote. So, Emily, what do you think?
Yeah, I was just thinking in we spoke with all three of the candidates, Aaron Mendenhall, Rocky Anderson, Michael Valentine, specifically about homelessness. Yeah. And full disclosure, I was just a child when Rocky was mayor the first time around. And so we had to do a bit of digging and we were like, okay, well, how did Rocky handle this issue when he was mayor? And we asked reporters from the time, we asked resource providers from the time, and they were like, didn't really seem like a big focus of his administration, yeah. you know? But in talking with him, you know, he's saying things like, well, we created permanent supportive housing, like with Palmer Court or maybe some other examples that he gave. And what I think is that he hasn't presented ideas that are different from what the city is already trying to do under Aaron Mendenhall. The city is trying to open more permanent supportive housing units. You know, now they are looking at this temporary shelter community, aka sanctioned camping program, on a small scale. Mm-hmm. I guess where Rocky's vision differs is
scale.
Right. Yeah. He wants a much larger campus and basically to eliminate unsanctioned camping throughout the city. So that's kind of where he differs, but not a huge difference, I feel like, from what Aaron's proposed.
You know, one of the fascinating things about me watching Rocky's campaign is here we have this sort of epic liberal, this liberal figure of the early 2000s, taking a much more conservative position than the incumbent mayor has taken. You know,
explain what you mean by that, because he used a term that people are referring as Trump-like.
Yeah, I mean his homelessness policy is exactly the same as the one that's been articulated by Donald Trump. You can go to the shelter, you can go to the camp, or you can go to jail. Those are your options. You can't stay here. You know, he's also taken this sort of scorched earth Trumpian approach too. And so it's been fascinating to watch that evolution. This is the guy that was one of the most outspoken opponents in Salt Lake of the Iraq War. You know, he's been a leader on climate change, international human rights. But on this particular issue, he's taken a tack to the right. And I'm not sure that that works in Salt Lake City, you know, and to the extent that it does work, to the extent that you can capture some of those more conservative voters to then in the next breath say, we also want, you know, socialized housing, basically. We want city-owned housing for these people. You might lose some of them. So I'm not exactly sure how that's going to resonate. We'll wait for 2 weeks and find out, I guess.
I thought we'd sort of back into the homelessness thing, but
we're taking it head on.
With the candidates, right?
Okay.
Like, we're in it.
Okay, so what can a mayor do about homelessness generally? And what are you hearing to that point from Mendenhall? And by the way, can I just say, this was one thing I do want to sort of mention. We're going to get back to Michael Valentine in a moment. We need to make it clear. There aren't just two people running for mayor. And so we'll get back to the fact that there is a third. But since we're here talking about homelessness, what are you hearing from Mendenhall and Anderson in particular about like key causes about homelessness, like deeper kinds of conversations about it? And do you have a sense that there's a kind of unrealistic expectation from voters and, you know, members of the, you know, citizens of the city about what actually can be done? So how are you thinking about that? Matthew Burbank first.
So I think, again, this fits right into one of the things that Emily mentioned earlier, which is, of course, the question of housing affordability generally, right? Because one of the reasons why you end up with more homelessness is in part because people cannot find places to rent that they can afford. And again, the city has a plan for that. They've been working on that. It's been something that the city's been working on for a very long time, and as a number of other cities have as well. But the fact that rents have gone up so dramatically within the city has really kind of exacerbated that problem, right? It's made it more difficult for people to figure out how to live. That's not exclusively the answer, because of course there are also people who are homeless who migrate from other places. They're not necessarily residents of Salt Lake City to begin with. But I think the issue then becomes, what can the city really do about that?
Yeah.
And the difficulty, of course, is there are some things the city can do. They can do some minor things with zoning. They can do some minor things with helping subsidize housing that provides more affordable housing. There are some things that city governments can do, But again, fundamentally, this is really a question of what is the rental housing market looking like? And cities don't have much control over that. Salt Lake is in a place where it's been growing. Right? People have been coming into the city. The job market's been good. There's demand for rental housing. And as a result of that, it sort of adds to this problem because, again, what you don't have are kind of places that are cheap and accessible and people can rent quickly and be able to get in there and stay in there.
Emily, this is something you've covered a long time now. So what do you think?
Yeah, and this is something I've been trying to understand for a long time too, Doug. Yeah. And we were able to ask Mayor Mendenhall specifically how she views the city's role in addressing homelessness. And she says it is zoning and land use decisions, you know, policies that the city puts forth, supporting, you know, like through funding, financial means, and convening, bringing other people to the table on this issue. And that's something Mayor Mendenhall has really harped on a lot during her campaign, but also for the 4 years she's been in office, is Salt Lake City can't handle this problem alone. And she's, I think, been fairly successful in reframing this issue, not as just Salt Lake City's homelessness crisis, but as the state's homelessness crisis. Mm. And so she's really leaned very hard into the convening part of this, how she views the city's role. But this is something that the city has been making progress on. They have a new 5-year housing plan. They have an anti-displacement gentrification plan that the city council has recently passed. They're looking at building more affordable housing by further incentivizing developers to do so. So I think that's how Mayor Mendenhall considers the city's role in this. But the other two candidates, I think, would want to take more of an aggressive approach. And maybe we'll talk more about Michael Valentine. But I think one thing in particular that he's proposing is declaring a state of emergency around homelessness. That's one of his big proposals around this issue. And can the city actually do that? You know, we've seen Denver's mayor do that, but in talking with city administration about declaring a state of emergency, they don't know if it's really possible what resources it would unlock.
So you've got, as you said, these sort of deeper, sort of indirect policy measures that Mayor Mendenhall has been thinking about. Let's talk about two particular issues that are sort of more on the ground kind of visceral ways of thinking about homelessness. You mentioned a sanctioned campground. That seems to be a dispute between, at least the size of it seems to be a dispute between Mendenhall and Anderson, those two at least in particular. And then the idea of abatements. Yeah. And in some ways, this is one of the things, Emily, you've talked about, is that in some ways, on one hand, you have these different ideas. You have, on one hand, voters who are unhappy with the way Mayor Mendenhall has handled the issue, in the sense that she hasn't done enough to get the homeless out of sight. On the other hand, she's been too heavy-handed.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. And Robert alluded to this a little bit, too, speaking about business owners who maybe don't like that unsheltered people sleep on their property or, you know, that there's a mess left behind or something like that. On the other hand, you know, we've really seen these camp abatements, as they're technically called. People don't generally like that term. So we also refer to them as sweeps. But
sweeps,
essentially, it's when the Salt Lake County Health Department, in partnership with cities in the county, come in and they say this camp is too big and it's messy and it's a health hazard, and so we are going to clean it up and you are going to move along. And it's been interesting to watch Rocky in this race, because he's managed to bring to his team people who hate having unsheltered people on their sidewalks and the people who think that the city's response has been traumatic and brutal through these camp abatements, through these sweeps. And, you know, I think this is a topic that the city and Mayor Mendenhall is really sensitive about. And, you know, she's tried to say this is really the county's role. This isn't the city's role. But it is the case that the city is collaborating with the county on the sweeps. It is the case that the city is at some level funding these. I think the Tribune had a really great investigative piece last year that the city had spent like $1 million on cleanup services around camp abatements, in addition to funding, you know, police at these abatements. So I don't know. It's just like, it really is remarkable that Rocky has been able to bring these two camps together who are, I think, completely opposed in their view of how the city's handled homelessness.
Is it a, Robert Gerke, is it a referendum basically on homelessness and Mayor Mendenhall's inability to deal with homelessness?
I mean, I think Rocky certainly tried to make it that.
Yeah.
That's the issue he's hit on over and over. Mayor Mendenhall's tried to pivot to talk about the Green Loop and more bikeable streets, more walkable neighborhoods, that sort of thing. You know, if I could just back up, I don't want to go too much into the affordable housing thing, because I think you guys are absolutely right. Affordable housing is one of the issues that homelessness stems from. But there are so many others. You know, we mentioned mental illness. You can't solve homelessness unless you can get scores more, you know, mental health therapists on board. You can't solve the drug issue unless you can get more drug treatment beds on board. You can't solve the vandalism or, you know, the defecation in the streets that Rocky talks about unless you can hire a bunch more police officers. And you can't solve affordable housing. You can't do all of these things without millions and millions of dollars and a lot more tax money than the city can bring to bear on it. So I think, yes, it is a statewide problem, and that's why it's a statewide problem. And that's why the city's response to it is inherently limited. Its ability to respond to it is inherently limited just by the scope of the problem and all the underlying issues that feed into that. You've got to address those root causes before you can address homelessness writ large.
We may come back to homelessness. Let me shift away for just a minute. We mentioned Michael Valentine, a small business owner. He's been described as this activist motivated in part anyway, just his dissatisfaction with what happened at the Utah Theater. Right. What can we say about him and the role that he's playing in the race?
In the debates, it's another voice criticizing Mayor Mendenhall's record. So in that sense, there's a bit of a tag team that comes with it. I think he's tried to appeal to a younger generation of voter. I mean, that's sort of one of the hurdles that Rocky's got to overcome. People who remember the time he was mayor are like my age now. And so, you know, not Emily's age. So, you know,
she was barely born.
And it's interesting. You go to these Rocky events, the people who are tabling for him are all, you know, my age or older, yeah. Right? Trying to make it resonate with younger voters is hard. And I think Michael Valentine's been trying to reach some of those younger voters who are maybe still idealistic about what the city can be and what a mayor can do. And so I think in that sense, he's been pretty valuable to the race. You know, I don't sense that he's going to factor heavily into it until we get to talk about ranked choice voting potentially. But I think, he's been a critic and he's been sort of a trying to articulate a vision for what he would like to see for the next generation. And, you know, we heard Mitt Romney bowing out of the Senate saying it's time for a new generation of leaders. I think maybe he's trying to put himself out there as that.
I think it's interesting that you mention age in this because, like, frankly, Aaron Mendenhall is not that much older than Michael Valentine, you know, maybe 10 years. But my colleague Ali Vallarta made this really great point on one of our podcast episodes recently that Michael Valentine is the ideas candidate. He is the only person in this race who doesn't have a record and, like, doesn't maybe fully understand what's actually possible.
So he's no, had no baggage, he's not bound by anything.
He can just propose, and we're like, huh, that is an interesting idea, you know? So I think that's the role that he's played in this race.
And again, I think the difficulty that he has, of course, right, what makes it such a challenge is he doesn't have the resources that the other two do,
no.
Right? Mayor Mendenhall has, you know, not surprisingly for incumbent, raised a lot of money. She's got a lot of money to spend on advertising and events and all kinds of things. And Rocky Anderson has done that quite well. And again, he's drawn on supporters he had from, you know, when he was mayor, as well as others. But again, for Michael Valentine, this was really sort of motivated more than anything else by his dissatisfaction with this decision in downtown Salt Lake about the theater. And that sort of launched his campaign in that way. And again, it's a nice thing to be able to have that story. On the other hand, again, when you think about what mayors are going to be asked to do, he's also going to get lots of questions about, well, how does this work and how does that work? And again, he doesn't have the details there that the others do in that way.
Yeah. I have to ask. What do lawn signs actually reveal about a political race. There are a lot of signs. It seems like this is an anecdotal impression of mine. And people have been asking, what's with all the Rocky signs? What do you make of the signs part of this story, which I think is sort of interesting?
That's a good question. And we were really curious about this, too. We saw Man About Town, Bryant Heath, post about this on Twitter, which is where all, you know, great conversations happen, that he noticed on, like, the really large streets in Salt Lake City, like 7th East or 13th East, he saw a lot of Rocky Anderson signs. But on smaller neighborhood streets, and of course this is all anecdotal, anecdotal evidence we're presenting, he saw more Aaron Mendenhall signs. And I don't know. I don't know that it really matters, but... You know, I'm hearing when I ask my friends, they're like, "Oh, Rocky Anderson, I saw his sign on the way to, you know, my dentist appointment or whatever." What is it about him, you know? So, do signs equal voters? Probably not, but I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, signs don't vote. The number of signs maybe doesn't matter as much. I think having some...
Did you say this was a particular tactic of Rocky Anderson?
Well, I have been told that this is a tactic he uses, that he tries to put signs in the candidate's neighborhood as sort of a psychological tactic.
Whoa.
And so if you go to Aaron's neighborhood, you do see that there are a lot of Rocky signs there. So I don't know if that's actually what he's trying to do there, but it makes some sense. You know, Rocky, I think, got signs up early to sort of let people know, hey, he's running again. You know, and so that was good. There was an awareness factor there. It speaks to maybe the organization, because if you don't have a decent campaign organization with volunteers to get those signs out, you're not necessarily going to get as many of them out. But I don't know that beyond that it's necessarily a deal breaker. You can't go around counting signs and say, oh, well, Rocky's going to win 2-1 because he's got more signs. It's a cheap advertising tactic. But if I was running the campaign and I had a week to spend putting up lawn signs or a week to spend doing voter ID, especially in what we're anticipating being a very low turnout race because it's been moved back from the normal election day and it's so close to Thanksgiving, I would much rather spend that time doing voter ID, because getting your voters to the polls is going to be a deal breaker in this one, I think.
Robert Gerke, he's a columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. We also have with us Emily Means. She's lead producer of the podcast CityCast Salt Lake. And Matthew Burbank, he's a professor of political science at the University of Utah. Let's talk about the Rocky Anderson administration when he was mayor. Was he popular? What do people remember about that time? I mean, one of the things that I wanted to ask about was that Anderson had a good bit of internal turmoil in his tenure as mayor. He went through 9 media spokespeople, 5 chiefs of staff. Tumultuous? Provocative? How do you describe it?
It was tumultuous, and it wasn't just internal turmoil. Obviously, there were the fights with the legislature. There was a time he got in a shoving match with Deloitte Hansen. A major developer here in town.
Said he was going to kick his ass, I think.
Yeah, I think that was the term he used. Yeah. Rocky, love him or hate him, you always know how Rocky's going to behave. He's a pretty bombastic guy who, you know, I think he would describe that as passionate. He did get upset with the mayor early on because there was this he said a whisper campaign that was accusing him of being a misogynist, the way he treated some of the employees in his office. And, you know, he obviously says that's not the case. He's been a champion of women. Mayor Mendenhall, at the debate where I brought this up, said, you know, pointed to the staffing that he had when he was there. It was, you know, disproportionately male. But, you know, when you've got Rocky, you know what you're going to get. I mean, he is sort of in-your-face kind of guy. But that worked. I think that worked for him. Mm. And it worked. You know, people in Salt Lake City, Democrats, it's predominantly Democrat, they are tired of being ignored by the legislature or run over by the legislature. And so I think when they got Rocky in early 2000, they were happy to have somebody who was going to stand up and tell them, hell no, this is going to be. So, you know, that's sort of his, I think, from my vantage point, was part of his legacy.
I think one of the things I would add to that is just one of the things that Rocky did, I think, well, that I have to say, surprised me a bit is, again, the Olympics were held here during mm-hmm. his tenure. And he did a very good job of sort of being the public face of Salt Lake City in that role, which I wasn't sure, given, again, his kind of legalistic combative background, that he was going to do that. But he did that well. He got along with Mitt Romney. He got along with, you know, the other people, the governor and everyone else. And he did that role quite well. But after he got reelected, particularly in his second term, right, all these other issues kind of came back over and over and over again. And when Ralph Becker got elected after Rocky Anderson, I mean, one of the big kind of sense that people had was, oh, God, we're glad to be done with Rocky, right? There was enough of that. And Ralph Becker was just sort of the opposite, right? He's a planner by nature. He was much more reserved. He's not bombastic at all. Yeah. And so people were like, yeah, this is where we're going to. Right? So,
you know, it's funny because I mentioned I wasn't around when Rocky was mayor the first time. But the two things I know about him are his Olympic legacy and that he's volatile. This has been coming up at the mayoral debates as well. And this is something Erin's been trying to ding him on, right? Because she's set herself up in this race as a peacemaker, as someone who can build bridges. And in direct contrast to the way Rocky conducted business while he was mayor. And it's something that even though everybody remembers this about him, he keeps trying to say, no, that's not me. You know, like I too can build bridges. I too have good relationships with Republicans. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think there it came with some consequences. Mm-hmm. The state legislature loved to punish Salt Lake City and Rocky Anderson for his antics as they saw them, you know. The mayor says that she's, as Emily put it, building bridges, forming these partnerships with the legislature. There are areas where she could point to that benefits the city, but the city still is sort of under the boot of the legislature in many ways.
How are you characterizing Erin Mendenhall's tenure as mayor? Emily, one of the things you just mentioned was she comes in with this global pandemic, an earthquake and major windstorm. Just in the first few months of her office, there wasn't, as you say, a playbook for dealing with any of this. But now, and I'm not sure you can tease out homelessness from that, of course, but what's the general feeling about, do you think, how Erin Mendenhall has performed as mayor? Maybe if you set mm-hmm. homelessness aside for a moment.
Hard to do, Doug.
Yeah.
I think
and maybe you shouldn't. But
if I set homelessness aside, we've pretty much stayed the course, I feel like. Hmm. You know, like I kind of feel like Salt Lake City was headed down a path anyway. All this growth that we've seen, you know, this didn't just happen because Erin Mendenhall became mayor. As far as I can tell, you know, plans have been in the works. We've been on this path probably since the Olympics, right? And so generally, I think people probably don't have a problem with how she's conducted herself as mayor. If we bring homelessness back into the equation, mm-hmm. I really think that this is an issue that people have been fired up around and have directed their ire towards Mayor Mendenhall. I think we can't untangle that from her legacy. You know, for better or worse.
And I think what I would add to that is, again, she handled the pandemic actually, I think, quite well as mayor. Again, she's not a public health official. She's a political leader. She had to rely on public health officials. And again, it was this very complicated because the public health people are saying, we need masks, we need mask mandates, we need to close things down. And the state legislature saying, nope, keep it open, no mask mandates, we're not doing that. And she has to negotiate that. You know. So, and I think she actually did that fairly well. I think she represented the city well and sort of people felt like, yeah, you could rely on her for information. The difficulty, however, is you can't really turn that into a campaign issue. You can't say, I helped get us through the pandemic, right? Because nobody wants to think about the pandemic and going back to that and thinking about, oh, yeah, that was great when that happened. No, it's like, that's not – you just can't use that as a political issue to help yourself with. So.
Well, what about the economy? Like the I mean, I think there's a clear sense that there's a fairly vibrant economy in downtown Salt Lake City right now. But Robert Gerke, does the economy – register in a municipal election, you know, the same way it does in a presidential election. That is, do voters consider the economy of the city important when they're casting their vote for mayor?
Yeah, I think perhaps in this case it's a double-edged sword because yeah, maybe people are moving to Salt Lake, maybe they're making more money, but they also can't afford to live in the city. Or, you know, they end up living in the suburbs like I do. You know, so I think maybe it's a bit of a double-edged sword like that. If the economy was bad, and then it would be, you know, much more cut and dry, I think, that it would be a hindrance to her. A couple things I wanted to add to the legacy, though, I think. I think Emily's 100% right that grand visions can't happen in 2 years or a year and a half because you lose a lot of your room to maneuver in that pandemic period. But, you know, there's been some stuff like the Glendale Regional Park that they're redoing, the Green Loop I mentioned before, the Open Streets Initiative, the Allen Park, which was saving Hobbit Town. by Westminster. You know, these are minor things, right? But there's also this sort of ramping up of road construction, trail design, and things like that, and that's causing a lot of people a lot of heartburn right now. But there was this backlog.
But is she filling potholes like that? You know what I mean?
That's right. Important. That's what mayors care about.
Yes,
and I think regardless of who wins, looking ahead to the next term, there's going to be a lot of runway for whoever ends up holding that office to really do a lot of things that they want to do because there's a lot of infrastructure money that came in from the federal government. There's going to be, presumably, it looks like a pretty stable, robust economy. And then you're going to have this Olympic announcement, presumably, where I think we're kind of counting on that. And so there's going to be a lot of room for the next. Oh, and the other thing I want to mention, the city council is fairly inexperienced. And so
you also said weak.
I did say weak to you. I didn't want to say weak.
Okay.
Sorry, guys.
Tell us more, Robert. Tell us more.
But because of that inexperience, they are weaker than the mayor. The mayor has a little bit more, you know, she's been on the city council. Mm-hmm. She's been mayor. Rocky has worked with city councils in the past. They're going to have some room to maneuver, presumably, in the next term. So that gives the mayor a lot of latitude to try to do whatever he or she, whether it's Aaron, Rocky, or Michael, want to do.
That's Robert Gerke. He's a columnist with the Salt Lake Tribune. Also joining us, Emily Means, a journalist with the podcast CityCast Salt Lake, and Matthew Burbank. He's a professor of political science at the University of Utah. Emily, you mentioned the idea of Mayor Mendenhall sort of staying the course, which kind of gets to something I wanted to talk about, which is like, how do you describe the state of the city? Mm-hmm. And not just the issues of homelessness and affordable housing. Clearly, those seem to be defining issues. But one of the things, Robert, you mentioned, I thought this was really interesting, in terms of like how the city is changing, you know, from this – is it a major – urban metropolis? Is it sort of a mid-market growing city? You talked about, Robert, here's how you put it. You said the city's sort of evolving from an adolescent teen city to a full-blown urban area. So with that in mind, what do you think? How is the place changing?
I mean, so I moved away in 2001. I moved to D.C. and came back about in late 2007. And I was shocked at how much it had grown. That was for most of Rocky's term I was away. But it had grown so much with the Olympics. And now there's talk of a Major League Baseball team or a professional hockey team. That would have been unthinkable, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago. So I think we're not in that tier one city. We're probably not a tier two city. But we're creeping up to that tier three city where I think, you know, people want to come here because, I mean, our nightlife's better. Our liquor laws have loosened a little bit. Our restaurant scene is a lot better. The arts and culture is improved and could probably still improve more. But I just think that it is developing that way. And with that urbanization, I think become some of the urban problems that we've talked about a lot ad nauseum here.
Right. I don't know if people are coming to Salt Lake City as like their number one destination. And I've been talking with some of my colleagues from around the country. You know, we've got some folks in Denver. Mm-hmm. That's a big city compared to Salt Lake, but not dissimilar in many ways.
But you also said it was that Salt Lake is probably 15 years behind.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I feel like we are on the same trajectory as many cool big cities. You know, I think, what was it, the New York Times that compared us to Austin recently? Like, we're going to be the new Austin, and we're a lot like Denver, and we want to do things like Denver. And so I think that we have a model for what Salt Lake City will be like in 10 years even, and especially if we keep adding cool amenities like Major League Baseball teams or whatever it might be. You want to see Salt Lake's future, I say look at any of these big cities.
The part that I would dissent from with that is that, again, this is still a city which has a predominant religious body, and that predominant religious body exercises a lot of influence. Mm-hmm. And so it's not going to be a city that's going to develop in the same way that a Denver will, because it's not going to be directed in the same way that it would. So I think
wait. Say more about this. So you're saying that the influence of the LDS Church has a kind of a potentially dampening effect on the way a city evolves?
Well, what I mean by this is there's a cultural element of that, but also there is the very practical element of that, and that is that the city is a big that the LDS Church is a big physical presence in the city, right? Because of course they own lots of property. Something like City Creek. Again, that doesn't happen elsewhere because there's nobody to say we want to put money into this and we're going to do it. Nobody else is opening new malls, right? That happened because there are particular interests that wanted that to happen. Hmm. Part of that very much was they wanted the city to be and look a certain way. And so I think that is going to continue on. I don't see that going away. I don't see that changing.
Because the church is ambivalent about the bar scene, for example.
That's right. I mean, it's not going to develop in the same way that Denver does, in the sense that nobody's really guiding Denver's, other than it's very much sort of free market. And here I think you're not as likely to see as free market a set of activities.
Hmm. That's really interesting.
That is interesting. All right. Who's voting for Rocky Anderson? Is there a type? I'll just say what I keep hearing. And forgive me, but I'm hearing this. Angry white people.
Angry older white people.
Angry older white
angry
people.
And older,
absolutely.
It's a
that's
synonym.
An important. Yes. Is that right?
Shaking fists at clouds.
Is that right?
No. I mean, I don't want to discount that they're, we mentioned these people who might be angry about the way they believe Mendenhall's been heavy-handed on homelessness. I don't think that those are generally older people. I think those are grassroots activists, millennials, maybe Gen Z in some cases, who, have been to a camp abatement and they've seen that it's terrible and they said this is Aaron Mendenhall's fault.
Yeah, it was a deal breaker. This sweeping that camp was a deal breaker for them.
Yeah. I think they're probably more likely actually to vote for Rocky than Michael Valentine even. Hmm. Just because it seems like Rocky has been a more serious candidate than Michael Valentine has this race.
Yeah, I mean, I think anecdotally, yes, people who remember Rocky are more likely to vote for him. And just based on what I've seen at the debates, the crowd that's supporting him and the volunteers for him seem to follow that model. The more conservative voters, like I said, I think who are disgruntled with homelessness or disgruntled with the crime or disgruntled for, any number of other reasons. That's kind of what you get when you're running as an incumbent. You have people who are going to support you for what you've been able to do, or you're going to have people angry at you for what you've not been able to do. So I think Rocky's definitely tapping into that latter block of voters.
Yeah. How has ranked choice voting – how is that going to change what happens, do you think? Or what potentially, I suppose, could happen?
Yeah, I mean, what makes this potentially interesting is, as we said earlier, we really have three candidates here, right? If there are only two candidates, doesn't really matter, right? You're still just voting for one candidate. If you've got three candidates, again, the one difficulty is if Michael Valentine, if I had a sense that Michael Valentine were more of a serious candidate, that is, that was going to draw a serious number of voters, then what that would do is that would make people think, okay, if I'm going to vote for, say, Rocky Anderson, who's then going to be my second choice? Is it going to be Michael Valentine? Is it going to be Aaron Mendenhall? And again, there's some calculation that goes into that. Again, if there are even more candidates, it becomes even more interesting, right? Because then you have to do more ranking with it. I mean, what it's supposed to do, what ranked choice voting should do, is it should make people aware that, yes, a second choice isn't all bad, right? So again, in a regular plurality election, you vote for the candidate or you don't, and it's whoever gets the most votes. You don't need a majority. You just need the most votes, right? So if you have three candidates, even if you're just getting, you know, 36%, right, you may win that election. Hmm. With ranked choice voting, what that does is it takes away a little bit of the sense of it's just I'm only voting for one candidate, right? Because now you can say this is my first choice, this is my second choice, this is my third choice. And if my first choice doesn't get elected, then maybe it's my second choice that will, right? And so that should make people think a little bit more strategically and also make candidates behave as ways to sort of say, yes, if I'm not your first choice, at least make me your second choice.
Right. Right. And they have. As the election has gone on, as we've seen, you know, what, a dozen debates or something like that between these mayoral candidates, Rocky and Michael are asking their supporters to put the other as the second choice.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to matter much because, I mean, if you had a race where it was like 40, 30, 20, something like that, you know, that was the breakdown, it might. If Aaron's under 48, then it could be interesting, you know, after the round one. But I think the likelihood is that Michael's poll, the number of votes, if he ends up third after the first round, which we anticipate, he's probably not going to have enough votes to swing Rocky out in front. Because the assumption, the conventional wisdom being that most of Michael's voters are going to go to Rocky and not Aaron. So, you know, I think it's unlikely that it'll make a huge difference. But I do think, you know, as we talked about at the outset, I think this race has gotten closer. That's my sense of it, at least, you know, and without polling, it's hard to tell. But I do think this is probably a single-digit margin at the end of the day.
Is it terrible of me to ask you to make a prediction? At least give me a sense of what you think is going to happen. It's tight, but you think, I'm getting a sense from you, Mendenhall pulls it out at the end. Robert Kirky, from your point of view?
Yeah, I think she's probably about 54, 55%.
Any idea, Emily?
I'm not going to make a prediction.
Okay. I respect that.
I'm a political scientist. So I always make predictions. They're usually wrong, but I'll make them anyway.
Go for it.
I think Mayor Mendenhall wins, and I think she wins largely because what this comes down to is a question of, do I go with Mayor Mendenhall, who I sort of know and I may not love everything about her, or do I go with Rocky Anderson? The difficulty, I think, for Rocky Anderson is he's a credible candidate because he has that legacy, but he's also well known for lots of other activities, and people are well aware of those. And so that's one of the things that makes people maybe have some pause there.
I want to pose the last question to Emily. This is something that you've described as kind of your central thesis. This is how you put it. You said this comes down to what you believe the role of Salt Lake City's mayor is in the context of where we live. Will you finally say something about that? I know you're going to explore this on CityCast at some point, but just give us a taste of it, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Listening to these debates, I think it really does come down to how you want Salt Lake City's mayor to conduct themselves in their relationships with our supermajority Republican legislature, with our Republican leaders in this state. And again, Erin, this entire time has posed herself as a bridge builder, as someone who has a seat at the table with our Republican legislature. And she thinks that means Salt Lake City will get a better deal out of, you know, whatever decisions the legislature decides to make. On the other hand, Rocky and Michael have both said, you know, you are the mayor of Salt Lake City. You are responsive and responsible for Salt Lake City residents. You are not the mayor of Utah. There's definitely some truth to what Erin is saying here. You know, if we're not at the table as the capital city, what could happen to us? Anything could happen to us. The legislature makes laws to punish Salt Lake City all the time. And so I really think it's, do you believe Salt Lake City mayor should be at the table and negotiating with the legislature, maybe to get something that, you know, isn't our first choice, but is incremental progress? Or should the mayor of Salt Lake City be suing the heck out of the state or being provocative to make a point?
Emily Means, she's the lead producer of the podcast CityCast Salt Lake. Also joining us was Matthew Burbank. He's a professor of political science at the University of Utah, and Robert Gerke, a columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you with comments or questions or suggestions, email them at radiowest@kuer.org. The program is produced by Tim Slover and Benjamin Bombard. Our intern is Elle Cowley. The executive producer is Carrie Watson. I'm Doug Fabrizio.